Welcome to ITE 1, Module 8, Part 2.
So, Rob, what you've got there is a table that you have to fill out. If you have issues with the table reading commands, let me know, and I'll show you how to do that. But you have to decide which classes those IP addresses go into, and I think there are 5, but I'm not sure.
Right. However, Jaws said there were no tables.
There
was not a table.
That you'll need. There are 5, but the ones that are listed, you'll only need classes A through C.
Yeah, right. There is a
if
table.
If you search for
there.
The word subnet in the module, you'll get to the heading, and then if you press L for list, it'll get you straight to the list of classes.
Well, yeah. But, so Jaws is saying there's no table there?
There's a table.
That's what I got, so maybe I downloaded a corrupted version of the data file.
You could always try redownloading
maybe.
It. You could always try it with
NVDA
as well.
Yeah. I don't usually trust Jaws to tell me what elements are in a file. I always read it top to bottom to actually see what is in the file, because sometimes Jaws decides not
sure
to tell you
did.
The correct information.
Yeah, I was using Alt-Control plus arrow keys, and it did not appear to interpret a table, but I will sure try again.
You have to be in the table,
though.
You have to be in. You have to go to where it says table with however many columns. You have to actually down arrow into it.
Is this a table in the current assignment? And I know I had problems with
8.3.2.
Go ahead.
Because I couldn't find the subnet mask that supposedly was...
You did fine. You did absolutely... You had no problem with the table that you did, Lynn. I believe I got your lab.
Yeah, tables can be a little tricky. Yeah, I'm pretty much getting the hang of them now. I mean, we've been doing tables in almost all the labs that we've done. So, I'm kind of getting the hang of it now.
Yeah, it's one of those things
one of the
where
fringe
you,
benefits
you have
of
to
our
get used to it, whether
Jaws
you want
table
to or
reading
not.
Commands will now second nature.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if I think you're actually going to continue studying and you fill out a table wrong, I will call you and show you how to fill it out right.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think she did that for me for one lab when I didn't
Sorry,
see
Lynn?
A blank column.
You're breaking
you
up in a serious
Are you
way.
Still needing to Skype about that one thing, that one lab? Because we can do that after lecture if you want.
If you want to just type it into chat, that's fine, and then we'll be able to get your entire question and answer it. Alright.
Lynn's question, you mean?
That's correct. I'm just looking for my notes, because... Here it is. Okay, I'm going to turn off my radio, and we will do this. We were talking about subnet masks last week, I believe. Find where I was. Any questions about anything from last week that anyone can think of before I start? And Alex is here. Good morning, Alex. Oh, an announcement for you guys, which will come out on the announce list when I get the press release all done. I went to Melbourne on Monday, and we actually won an award.
I saw this on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, the ANSI Award for Internet Access and Digital Skills.
Morning.
And good morning. And it was really neat. They gave us an incredible write-up, which I'm going to... compile and put together for everybody to see. We got a huge spirally glass trophy, and it was all really cool. So, yeah, very exciting stuff.
Recognition.
Nice. Yeah, I remember reading about something about that on Twitter, too. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's cool. It was a really neat thing, and hopefully that will mean that we'll get to expand and offer more scholarships to students and get more paid staff and get more volunteers and teach more classes and all sorts of good stuff. But we'll see what happens. Okay. The first thing we're going to talk about is IPv6. Unfortunately, we're running out of IPv4 addresses. IPv6 has been developed to alleviate this problem. In the future, when you receive IP addressing information, you will get 4 billion IP addresses. That's as many IP addresses as IPv4 has right now, for everyone in the world. So you are going to get an unbelievable amount of IP addresses just for you. These IPv6 addresses are 128 bits long and written as 8 blocks of 16 bits written in hexadecimal. Now, there are examples of these in your notes, which I am not going to go through because a braille display is really needed to do them justice, or looking at them very, yeah, very carefully with speech.
I saw
They're
those.
Really big.
They're insane.
We're going to have a couple of Thursday chats, or Friday chats, cavicasts, on these IPv6 addresses and how they work. For the folks
Announced
at home...
Tomorrow's Harry as well.
Did.
Okay. No, this is
no,
another one.
New one.
Tomorrow, tomorrow, everybody, Jason Fair is doing a flight sim demo, just announcing it so
cool,
that everybody knows.
Tomorrow, yes!
Yeah. Team talk.
Nice.
I'll announce it once the desktop's rebuilt. I'm not here, Grace.
Cool.
I'm leaving, so
okay.
Have fun.
If anyone wants to come and needs help getting Team Talk set up, get a hold of me soon. do not do it tomorrow morning. I can't help you tomorrow morning because we'll be setting up for
do
demo and
Do
not
do it
stuff.
A half an hour before the presentation.
Please?
That will be a bit difficult.
But if you want help,
well,
we are so willing to help you. Okay. Alright, so Ian Murray is going to do a chat on IPv6 theory, and Kerry is going to do one on IPv6, how do we get it to work? So there's going to be a couple of good chats on IPv6, and yeah, it was really, really quite an interesting time when we were at the awards, and they were doing the IPv6 awards, and everybody had kind of had a few. And we were all talking about how sexy IPv6 was, and all cheering about IPv6 being sexy. It was something. Okay.
So there'll actually be a difference in the way things operate when they start using these more regularly?
Not for you. Not for a user.
Not on my end.
Notice the difference.
Because I keep hearing about people talking about, how are these going to work? And I'm kind of wondering, like, what effect it would have on the user.
For you?
No user visible changes, no. It's all still names. www.alireadsapileofbooks.com will still load and pile things into your browser. It'll just work differently underneath the stuff.
Okay. A media access control, or MAC address, is a physical address assigned to every network interface card on every device. Your local IPv6 address will incorporate your MAC address. This is also known as the physical address. You can equate this to your fingerprint or name. These refer to your physical body and are unlikely to change. That is basically a MAC address. A MAC address is 48 bits long. It is a group of, 12 hexadecimal numbers, each in pairs. So you've got 6 pairs of hexadecimal numbers separated by dashes. That's your MAC address. It's 48 bits. If you're not in discovery, you don't care. All you need to know is the MAC address is the physical address. That's it. All right. So we're going to talk about Lynn's topic that she wanted to talk about, which is DHCP. DHCP is Dynamic Host Control Protocol. This is a way of automatically assigning IP address information to hosts so that no duplicate or invalid address information is assigned, unless you're BERT and BERT's special router, which doesn't do this. This is usually a feature of your router. If DHCP is enabled, hosts look for a DHCP server and send requests for address information. The server then picks an IP address from its database and offers it to the host. The host then accepts the addressing information and the server leases it to the host for a specific period of time, usually a week. If there is no DHCP server found, Windows may assign you an automatic private IP address, or a PIPA. This address starts with 169 and allows you to communicate with clients on your local network that also have PIPAs. Your computer will request a regular IP address every 5 minutes. Most home ISPs give customers one public IP address. You may be wondering how people are able to connect to more than one computer to the internet. Your router uses Network Address Translation, or NAT, to translate and the private IP address of each device to your public address. Any questions on any of that? Okay. So basically with the DHCP, you want to be able to put the four bits of the DHCP process in order. The host requests an IP address, and then the server gets one, the host accepts that IP address, and then it is leased to the host. Protocol is a set of rules. So, internet protocols are sets of rules for network communications. When you send a letter in the mail, you're using a protocol. The letter goes in an envelope, and the address of the person receiving it goes in one place on the envelope, and your return address goes in another. And you must add postage as well. If you were to swap the location of the two addresses, or not include postage, the letter would not reach its destination. The main function of network protocols include identifying errors, compressing the data, deciding how data is to be sent, and deciding how to announce sent and received data. Another very important thing a network protocol specifies is timing. Messages must reach their destination within a certain time so that computers do not wait forever to receive messages that have become lost. If an expected message fails to reach its destination in the allotted time, the protocol may define alternative steps that the receiving host will take. Some protocols are actually a group of protocols that are dependent on each other, called a suite. We visualize these protocol suites as being layered. And let's think about something that is layered. How about a good layered cake? Let's think about our layered cake as a suite of protocols. So the first layer of our cake is going to be yummy cake bottom. The next layer might be some good cream. Another layer of cake, let's put some strawberries in on the next layer. More cake, then some really good cream cheese frosting icing, and the top layer will be chocolate sprinkles. All of those layers make a cake. Without one of those layers, the cake is not going to be nearly as yummy and delicious. And without the layers of cake in the middle, the strawberry... Go ahead.
Oh, it's gonna... If it becomes too messed up, it'll fall over.
Yeah. Without the layers of cake, the strawberries and cream will kind of mix together, which is okay, but we just should have that yummy extra layer of cake because we're indulgent and good like that. So, that's how...
I'll be right over.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
So, that's how our protocol stacks work. A layer can be made up of one protocol or many protocols. So, if I had put mixed fruit in instead of strawberries, my raspberries would be one protocol, my strawberries would be one protocol, the blueberries would be one protocol, and the peaches would be another protocol, all making up one yummy layer of cake. We're going to go over table 1 in class, but I strongly suggest you guys go over the table 2 in the text as well, which goes into lots of details about various protocols. Alright, the first protocol is TCP/IP. It does not have a port. This is a suite of protocols used to transport data on the internet. The next one is called NetBUI or NetBIOS. It is on ports 137, 139, and 150. It's a small, fast protocol designed for a workgroup network that requires no connection to the internet. The next protocol is IPX-SPX. It does not have a port, and it is a suite of protocols used to transport data on an older Novell network. You're not going to see that often. All right, we've got HTTP. It is on port 80. It is a communication protocol that establishes requests and response to connections on the internet. And now here comes the fun and the stretching of our brains, because we're going to see if anybody knows the ports for the rest of these protocols. Now, you don't have to know them, but if you have any kind of a guess or inkling of what they are, let us know. So, does anyone have any idea of what ports HTTPS might be on? Close! Close! Yeah. I'm just going to see who said that. Oh, you guys are so close. Yes, 443 is the correct answer. Very close. This is a protocol that uses authentication and encryption to secure data as it travels between the client and web server. HTTPS is on 443. FTP. What port or ports is FTP on? Anybody know?
21.
21 and 20 is the correct answer. 22 is either Telnet or SSH. I'm a horrible, horrible, horrible A-plus person.
22 is SSH.
Yay! A protocol that provides services for file transfer and manipulation. SSH is 22. It is a protocol used to securely connect to a remote network device. So, you use SSH to control routers. Lots of routers have SSH backends that you can use to control them via the command line. And Telnet is 23, a protocol used to connect to a remote network device. How about POP3? Anyone know what
110.
POP3 is on? Yay! It is 110. He jumped right on that. A protocol used to download email messages from an email server. We have IMAP. Anyone know the protocol for, or the port for IMAP?
143
is right. Absolutely. A protocol used to download email messages from an email server. So now, I'm going to just take a quick, brief detour to tell you guys the differences between POP3 and IMAP, because they don't really go into it well enough. All right, POP3 is a protocol which is the post office protocol, and it is like going to the post office and pulling your mail out of a mailbox, and now you have the mail.
But I think completely losing.
We don't either, because we didn't get the rest of your question. You may want to type it in the chat. It's not your computer, it's your internet connection.
Okay, she popped out of chat.
Okay. I was trying to type it out, but she left before I could. Alright. Yeah, your internet is the problem. You may want to reset your router if you know how to do so. Okay. So, the POP3 protocol, you go to the post office, you pick up your mail. Some POP3 clients...
Keep going, Ray Saul.
Okay. You take care of it. Okay. with IMAP, your mail is stored on the server. So you have a chance to get your IMAP from... or your mail from multiple computers, and when you delete it, it's deleted from all computers because it's all on the server. And if you save something, then you will it's basically on the server, so you have copies of everything on every computer, and you can see everything that you have on every computer. Does that make any sense?
It's kind of like having someone actually at the post office, if you had the luxury of having someone read your mail to you. while you're right there. That's kind of what you get.
You have the post office in your home, and you have a post office in every home. And it has the same mail in it, because the post office has photocopied every piece of mail you have and put it in your mailbox. But when you take a photocopy out and throw it away, all the photocopies get removed, because you have magic throw-it-away fairies that come and take them away. This is a much better idea than POP3. And if you have a Gmail or any way of having IMAP mail, you probably should. Okay, SMTP. What port is SMTP?
25.
25. It is 25. A protocol used to send mail in a TCP/IP network. Alright. Internet Control Message Protocol. ICMP is used by devices on a network to send control and error messages to computers and servers. It has many functions, including announcing network errors, announcing network congestion, and troubleshooting. The best example of ICMP in action is ping. Has anyone ever used ping?
Yep.
Has anyone ever not used ping? Is anyone unfamiliar with ping? It's okay if you are. Okay. So, we will talk about it. Ping stands for Packet Internet Groper, and is used to test connections. If you want a demonstration of ping, hit Windows R and CMD, and I'm just making sure this works. All right, and you can ping, type in ping, P-I-N-G, space, www.ciscovision.org, and press enter. And you will get four ICMP request back. It's going to send out an ICMP request saying, are you there? It's going to send one back and say, yes, I'm here. Here's 32 bytes of data back. And it's going to do this four times and give you a report at the end.
And it does. And we see the IP address at the same time.
Everybody good with that?
I need to type exit to get out.
Yes.
Yay! Ping lets you know if you can access a particular IP address or host from your machine. When you use the ping command, four ICMP requests are sent from your computer to the device you are testing connectivity to.
Be for careful each if echo you're request, to the Mac because the, by
it'll just keep going.
Keep going and going and going until you stop it. So you need dash C and the number. And on the Mac, at least, you can also do dash A, and it'll go dunk. Every time a ping comes back.
I actually was doing an exercise in exploration, and I had pinged a workstation, and I closed out. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm just done. I came back the next week, and it was still pinging that workstation, you guys. It was still going.
Oh my
Stop.
God!
This thing's still ping. This thing's still going. Whoa! I didn't realize that it did that. I figured I got four and then I was done. But no, it went all week.
No, that's a Windows thing. Control C, go away.
Yeah, basically. It was really funny. Alright, so for each echo request the device receives, it sends back an ICMP echo request. If you type in a name of a host, ping will also give you its IP address, just like we did. Other ICMP messages are used to report undelivered packet data on an IP network that includes source and destination IP addresses and whether a device is too busy to handle packets. Data in the form of a packet arrives at a router, which is a networking device that forwards data packets across networks towards their destinations. If the router does not know where to send the packet, the router dumps it. This is important for your test. Remember it. If the router does not know where to forward the packet, it just drops it. I don't know what to do with it. Plop it on the floor. It's kind of like what you do when someone hands you a bunch of your school papers, you know, when you were younger, and your teacher hands you back your printed papers. And you get home, and you pull them out of your backpack, and you dump them on the floor because you don't know what else you were going to do with them. And you don't feel like dumping them in the trash. It just drops it. It's over. The router then sends an ICMP message back to the sending computer, informing it that the data was not delivered. When a router becomes very busy, it might send a different ICMP message to the sending computer, indicating that it should slow down due to congestion on the network. It's like when someone's talking too fast, and you say, slow down, slow down, slow down. I'm trying to process what you're saying, and I'm busy trying to figure it out, so you need to slow down with the information you are giving me.
When you're talking to another JAWS user, it's when you say, can you alt control page down a few times for me? I did that to a friend of mine once. It was funny.
Oh yeah, some people have their JAWS at weird, freakish speeds, yeah, so you have to slow them down temporarily.
Okay, any questions on protocol stacks? Or not protocol stacks, but protocols in general, and ICMP? Cool. So we all have ICMP and understand kind of what it does. All right. Next, we're going to talk about physical network devices. Hubs are very simple network devices. When they receive data, they forward it out through every other port. Since all devices receive the transmissions, hubs create a lot of network traffic. Hubs are not often used in modern networks. In fact, I think I've seen one once. Hubs are like that friend that you tell something to, and they just broadcast it to everyone else. That's basically your hub. Multiport repeater. It's just going to pour that information out to everything. The hosts on the other end then have to ignore it unless it's for them. Do we all understand what hubs are?
And they generate loads and loads of traffic because of the fact that all they're doing is just forwarding one device's information. For a minute, I thought you said hugs were simple network devices, and then I realized what you were talking about.
No,
hugs were network devices?
Yeah, no, not quite. I don't know why I...
Well, there is some networking.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think about it, that's true. You have to network with people to get hugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Remember, that's okay. Remember that files are broken up into smaller chunks called packets when being sent over a network. This allows for error checking, and if that packet gets lost, only that packet needs to be retransmitted. Packet loss happens all the time, without you being aware of it, except for Lynn, who is suffering from serious packet loss and is completely aware of it, but doesn't realize that that is what's happening to her.
Hi, I'm here, I can...
So that's what happens when you break up, let's say on Team Talk or Ventrilo. Packets are just lost all over the place.
Yeah. It's dropping bits. You can hear us. You're still breaking up a bit. You may want to reset your router at some point. As long as you can hear us, it's okay. Okay. So, yes, it's when you lose packets, or when you're watching a video, and you don't get bit to the video, those packets have been lost, and a serious amount of those packets had to have been lost for you to notice. Address information is added to the beginning and end of the packets before they are transmitted. The packets, along with the address information, is called a frame. LANs are often divided into sections called segments, similar to the way a company is divided into departments. The boundaries of segments can be defined using a bridge. A bridge is a device used to filter network traffic between LAN segments. Bridges keep a record of all the devices on each segment to which the bridge is connected. When the bridge receives a frame, the destination address is examined by the bridge to determine if the frame is to be sent to a different segment or dropped. The bridge also helps to improve the flow of data by keeping frames confined to only the segments to which the frame belongs. So it's only going to send it out if it needs to go to a different segment. Otherwise, it's going to ditch it because it already went to where it needs to go. Switches are sometimes called multi-port bridges because they can have many ports. They are more complex than bridges. A switch maintains a table of the MAC addresses for computers that are connected to each port. When a frame arrives at a port, the switch compares the address information in the frame to its MAC address table. The switch then determines which port to use to forward the frame. This causes much less congestion on the network because each port on a switch is its own network segment. So hubs repeat everything, switches connect to network segments, and routers connect networks to each other. I'm going to go back to the switches quickly. So a switch is going, if you send a message, an instant message, to your coworker across the room, a hub is going to send those packets to everybody. A switch is going to look at the packets of the instant message that you sent and only send that traffic to your coworker's computer. Now, with a hub sending it to everybody, that doesn't mean everybody gets the message because all the other hosts just ignore it. It just means that it was sent to everybody and clogs the network up. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Why? It could be a number of reasons. It's an internet thing. It could be something wrong with your router, which you should reset, possibly. It could be a bad network cable that is broken in some place and dropping packets. It could be that your internet, your ISP, is just having a really bad time of it and has some kind of outage or problem in your area. You would have to troubleshoot that. But the first thing I'd do is...
Sorry, just doing a bit of relaying.
That's good, thank you. Okay. So, our routers connect networks to each other. They can be computers with special networking software, or a standalone device built by a network equipment manufacturer. They use IP addresses to transport frames between networks. Routers contain tables of IP addresses along with optimal destination routes to other networks. Wireless access points allow devices to connect to the network wirelessly using radio waves. As previously discussed, they have a limited range, so multiple access points may be needed. Most home users purchase multi-purpose devices. In Discovery, they call them ISRs. They are smaller, cheaper, and it is easier to configure one device than three. They usually contain a switch, router, and a wireless access point. Okay, do we all understand the difference between switches, hubs, and routers, and what multifunction devices do? Are we awake?
Yes.
What? Huh? Did you say something?
Somebody kick him. No, don't worry about it.
It has to be a virtual kick, right?
I'm in an MSN window. If you want me to send you a bunch of A enter messages, I can totally do that and make sure you're awake.
That one, yeah, that one. Which
no, what are you
doing like now?
Now what were you asking about?
I never
about
heard
the
about those A enter message.
You just basically send someone messages with the letter A really quickly, and it goes ding 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 ding.
Yeah, and it...
you can interrupt.
Only do it to people that you know who are gonna be okay with that.
Okay, I don't know the difference
in
these things. I'm completely.
It's basically just.
Wow. I wouldn't want to annoy people.
Well, so
like
you're speaking over Lynn. Go ahead, Lynn.
The answer is I don't know and I'm completely lost.
Okay. I'll just briefly summarize for you. Hub repeats everything, multi-port repeater. It's going to take the information that you send and send it out to every other host. The host that it is for takes that information, all other hosts ignore it. Switches. A switch takes the information that is sent from one port on a LAN and sends it to the other port on a LAN that it needs to be sent to, and only that port. So it doesn't send it out to everything else. This creates much less traffic, and you're not going to have collisions in that area. A router takes the information that you send it and can transport it to other networks. So hubs repeat everything, switches take care of traffic in a LAN, routers send traffic to other networks. Is that a good 30-second summary for you?
Thank you.
No problem. Okay. And if you want more, listen to the recording, because I just did a little more on that, but that's the basic idea. All right. Now it's time to talk about cables used in networking. Twisted pair cable is used for telephone wiring and Ethernet cabling. In this type of cable, each pair of wires makes a circuit on which data can travel. The two wires are twisted together to provide protection against crosstalk, which is noise generated by other pairs of wire in the same cable. It is pronounced crosstalk. It is not crosstalk. Yes, I have actually said that before, written it that way before, and everything else, and it was in lecture, and it was my first lecture, and it was hilarious to everybody else. It's crosstalk. Pairs of copper wires.
The way I remember what crosstalk is if you guys have listened to four-track tapes a lot, and you can hear where bits of one track kind of bleed over into the one you're listening to now, like you can hear that, you know, the narrator saying stuff. That's crosstalk.
And
you're getting
that
audio
always
that's
used to
bleeding from one track to, yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
When I was little, that used to totally freak me out. Anyway. pairs of copper wires are encased in color-coded plastic insulation and twisted together. An outer jacket protects the bundles of twisted pairs. When electricity flows through a copper wire, a magnetic field is created around the wire. A circuit has two wires, and in a circuit, the two wires have oppositely charged magnetic fields. When the two wires of the circuit are next to each other, the magnetic fields cancel each other out. This is called the cancellation effect. And you know what? That is not on your tests, and it's not really that important. It's just, wow, science. Yay. There are two types of twisted pair cabling. Unshielded twisted pair, or UTP, is the less expensive, more common variety used in most networks. It has two or four pairs of wires. This type of cable relies solely on the cancellation effect produced by the twisted wires pairs that limits signal degradation caused by electromagnetic interference, EMI,
I thought there were three
and radio frequency interference, RFI. No, there are two.
They don't do screen.
We're talking about... No. Okay. That's shield. We've got unshielded and shielded.
Okay.
It has a range of 100 meters or 328 feet. Our other type of cabling is called shielded twisted pair, or STP. Each pair of wires is twisted in a metallic... 328?
Oh, I thought you said 128. I'm like, wait, that's not right. You said it right. I heard you wrong.
Okay, it was 100 meters, 328 feet. You need to know this, by the way. This is important. That the unshielded twisted pair is 100 meters or 328 feet. In Discovery 2, we have this lab that we do, which is really strange. And you have to plan out network add-ons for a building. And knowing that is really, really good information. Okay. The other type of twisted pair cabling is called shielded twisted pair, or STP. Each pair of wires is wrapped in a metallic foil to better shield the wires from noise. Four pairs of wires are then wrapped in an overall metallic braid or foil. STP reduces electrical noise from within the cable. It also reduces EMI and RFI from outside the cable. It is more expensive and harder to install because it is so thick. Also, the metal shielding must be grounded at both ends. If this is done incorrectly, the shield acts like an antenna, picking up unwanted signals instead of shielding from them. So, it can be done completely wrong and get rid of and make everything worse than it was before. UTP comes in several categories, which are based on two factors. Numbers of wires in the cable, and the numbers of twists in these wires. Category 3 is the wiring used for telephone systems and for Ethernet LAN 10 Mbps. You probably won't see much of that. Category 3 has four pairs of wires. Category 3 telephone cable is usually terminated into an RJ11 connector. It's smaller than your RJ45. If you're American, get down. I'm sorry?
Oh, okay. Part of your microphone had gone.
Oh, is it better?
Yeah, it's better now.
Okay. If you're American, you can go down and have a look at your phone cabling. That is RJ11 cabling. Category 5 and Category 5E have four pairs of wires with a transmission rate of 100 Mbps and 1000 Mbps, respectively. Category 5 and 5E are the most common network cables used. Category 5E has more twists per foot and category 5 wiring. These extra twists further prevent interference from outside sources and the other wires within the cable. We also have Category 6 cables. Some Category 6 cables use a plastic device to separate the pairs of wires, which prevents interference. The pairs also have more twists than Category 5E cable. Category 5, 5E, and 6 cables terminate into an RJ45 connection. An RJ11 telephone connector has 6 pins, and an RJ45 connector has 8 pins. You cannot easily feel the difference between between Cat 5 and Cat 5E cable, and the Cat 6 cable is a little less flexible. But you basically have to go to the store and buy the cable you want. And you can label it if you have many different types of cabling around, although you guys will probably only ever really use Cat 5 and Cat 5E cabling anyway, and whatever you get is probably good enough for what you're going to do. In a business setting, though, it gets important. Any questions?
I just have one little comment. When I was reading this chapter, something that gave me a pause, and then I reread it like 3 times, so I'm sure I got it right. It mentions the different Ethernet speeds, and it says each time that the maximum distance is the same thing. So instead of just saying all of the, you know, it doesn't matter whether you've got 10 Mbps or 100 or gigabit, it's going to go 100 meters or 328 feet. It says each one like it's a separate,
like it's going to be different.
Or fact. Yeah, exactly. So that like confused me. I like went back and reread. Does one of them give me less? Because it's like, you know, when it lists advantages and disadvantages of each one, but basically relists the same one. So you don't need to waste a lot of time rereading that like I did.
Thank you.
That's a good point. Thank you, Cisco.
It sounds like you have a bunch of chipmunks in the back in your background.
My stepdaughter's watching something on TV.
Ah, that explains it. All right, any other questions? Okay. Coaxial cable is a copper core surrounded by heavy shielding. There are several types of coaxial cable. ThickNet, or 10 base 5, coax cable used in networks and operating at 10 megabits per second with a maximum length of 500 meters, or 16,040.4 feet. We've got ThinNet 10 base 2.
Right. 1600.
That's about 3 miles.
1600, not 16,000.
Oh, 1600. I'm sorry.
That makes
you.
More sense.
I was like, wait a minute.
yeah, okay. 1600 48.4
feet. That proved
who's
awake. Whoever noticed that.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Bert. And Sean. We have ThinNet 10Base2 coax cable used in networks and operating at 10 megabits per second with a maximum length of 185 meters or 607 feet. At least I got that one right. We have RJ59, commonly used in cable television in the U.S. RG6, higher quality cable than RG59 with more bandwidth and less susceptibility to interference. He won't be seeing many of these cables anymore. You're probably only going to see them possibly in internet land coming into your cable router. You're not really going to do much with them. An optical fiber is glass or plastic conductors that transmit information using light. These cables have one or more fibers inside of a sheath. And we talked about what if you ever felt little fibers in a light, in one of those like weird lava lights, you know, psychedelic colory little strandy light lamp things. Those are your fiber optic cables. Because it's made of glass, fiber optic cable is not affected by EMI or RFI. Signals are converted into light pulses to enter the cable and converted back to electrical signals when they leave it. This means that fiber optic cable can deliver signals that are clearer, can go farther, and have greater bandwidth than cables made of copper or other metals. Fiber optic cables can reach distances up to several miles or kilometers before signals need to be regenerated. Fiber cables are more expensive than other types of cables, and their connectors are harder to assemble. Common connectors for fiber optic cable, wow, I really screwed that up, are SC, ST, and LC. These are the three types of fiber optic cables. Are half duplex, which allows data to flow in only one direction. So two cables are needed. The two types of fiber optic cables are multimode cable, a cable that has a thicker core than single mode cable. It is easier to make, can use simpler light sources, LEDs, and works well over distances of a few kilometers or less. We have single-mode cable. It has a very thin core and is harder to make, uses lasers as light sources, and can transmit signals dozens of kilometers with ease. Any questions on cabling before we move on?
You'll learn more about how fiber optic cables are put together and the fun chemicals that are used in Chapter 15.
Oh yeah, we do get to do
Ooh,
that.
Fun.
It's interesting yeah. stuff. Nothing you will ever do, but interesting anyway. Okay, nothing I or most of us will ever do. I can't think of a blind person who's ever built a fiber optic cable.
Will? Has he done it?
No.
Seems to have done
a lot. I don't even
think
he's done that.
I don't think he's done that. I don't think he wants little tiny shards of glass in his fingers.
That's what you'll wind up with.
If you don't die from the chemicals that are used to actually make them first. Next we'll talk about, we don't have any other questions on cabling? Are we good? Everybody awake? Oh, hold on. I'm going to sneeze, I think. No, never mind. Alright, we're going to talk about network topologies next, so wake up. This is important. A network topology is a map of the physical or logical layout of a network. The physical layout is how the devices on a network are physically laid out. You know what? This seems, if you think this sounds simple, this is quite a hard concept for some people to grasp, the difference between the physical and logical. So this is why I'm paying so much attention.
But the logical topology is always like, been really hard for me.
The logical topology is how the devices communicate over the network. A LAN architecture comprises of all of the components that make up the structure of the communication system. This includes the hardware, software, protocols, and sequence of operations. The type of topology determines the capabilities of the network, such as ease of setup, speed, and cable lengths. We're going to go over the different types of physical LAN topologies. Alright, in a bus topology, each computer connects to a common cable. The cable... Hold on just a second. I have a very dying... device which must be plugged in or I won't be able to read.
Nothing like trying to get past those really long battery messages, eh?
Oh, I just saw the first one kind of flash on my screen and I'm like, oh, I'll just go fix this now.
Yeah, otherwise I keep trying to.
Okay. AC adapter connected. All is right with the world. Okay, so the bus topology. Everything is connected to a common cable. All of the messages go down the cable to where they need to be. It's like a bus line. You get on the cable and you ride down the bus line until you want to get off, and you get off at your stop. Bus topology. The cable has a small cap installed at the end called a terminator. The terminator prevents signals from bouncing back and causing network errors. So it's like the guy at the end of the bus line that says, everybody off, and rouses you from your sleep or MP3 player and tells you you need to get off that bus. That is your terminator cap. We've got a ring topology. In a ring topology, hosts are connected in a physical ring or circle. Because the ring topology has no beginning and no end, the cable does not need to be terminated. A specifically formatted frame, called a token, travels around the ring, stopping at each host. If a host wants to transmit data, the host adds the data and the destination address to the frame. The frame then continues around the ring until the frame stops at a host with the destination address. The destination host takes the data out of the frame. So it's basically pass the plate around, put what you want onto the plate for somebody else, and somebody else will
like
pick it up
potato.
Off that plate. Yes, it's not like hot potato, because when it stops, you don't get out. But sort of, yes.
Well, I was just thinking it just keeps going till it reaches its thing and it stops, you know.
But it doesn't stop. It never stops. It just
like
keeps going.
It's like a game of hot potato that never ends.
Because it's in a circle.
Yeah, because it's going to keep going. It never stops. It pulls what it wants off that plate, and it keeps sending that plate on, or whatever.
Take one down, pass it around.
Yes, basically.
Kind of.
You go to a party, and you see a nice-looking member of the opposite sex, and decide to buy them a drink. And you tell the waiter that you want to send this drink down to said person, and that person then takes the drink and drinks it. And maybe they'll send you one back. I don't know. The star topology. The star topology has a central connection point, which is normally a device such as a hub, switch, or router. Each host on a network has a cable segment that attaches the host directly to a central connection point. The advantage of a star topology is that it is easier to troubleshoot. Each host is connected to the central device with its own wire. If there is a problem with that cable, only that host is affected. The rest of the network remains operational. So that's going to be like the physical topology of your router. You might have a couple of computers hanging off of your router, and it would be a star topology. Hierarchical or extended star topology. A hierarchical or extended star topology is a star network with an additional network device connected to the main networking device. Typically, a network cable connects to one hub, and then several other hubs connect to the first hub. Larger networks, such as those of corporations, universities, use hierarchical star topology. And we've got a mesh topology. The mesh topology connects all devices to each other. When every device is connected to every other device, a failure of any cable does not affect the network. The mesh topology is used in WANs that interconnect LANs. There are two... So these are really expensive to maintain because you have to have a whole lot of cables and a whole lot of different devices connecting everything to everything else. So you're not going to see these often. Any questions on the physical topologies of networks?
I think isn't one of the problems with Token Ring... Oh, I'm sorry, Lynn, go ahead.
You're most commonly going to see a star topology. It's going to be your devices connected up to your multi-service device, your router, what you call a router, which is a multi-function device. Your computers will be plugged into that, and each will have their own cable or wireless connection. You're not going to see. You've probably never seen a bus or a ring topology. You probably wouldn't at this point.
When I picture the ring topology, I picture cables, like, curved and stuff. I'm sure they're not, but that's kind of what my head does.
Fair enough.
Picture these cables sort of bent into funny shapes.
Okay. There are two most common types of logical topologies, are broadcast and token passing. A broadcast topology is first come, first serve. A host sends data to another device, or it can send data to all hosts on the network. Token passing controls network access by passing an electronic token sequentially to each host. When a host receives a token, it can send data on the network. It's like those games that you played in preschool, that only the person with the beanbag or special object had the right to talk. If the host has no data to send, it passes the token to the next host, and the process repeats itself. The physical and logical topology make up a LAN's architecture. The Ethernet architecture is based on the IEEE 802.3 standard. Ethernet is based on 802.3. Remember that. Or sorry, yeah, 802.3. That's right. The IEEE 802.3 standard specifies that a network uses carrier sense multiple access with collision detection. CSMA/CD. You'll be asked about this on the test.
Or SMACT, as Carrie says.
SMACT. That is good. Access control methods in CSMA/CD hosts access the network using the first-come, first-serve broadcast topology. Ethernet uses a logical bus or broadcast topology and either a bus or star physical topology. As networks expand, most Ethernet networks are implemented using an extended star or hierarchical star topology. Pardon me. Standard rates are 10 Mbps, 100 Mbps, or gigabit Ethernet, which can reach speeds of 1000 Mbps. All right. The token ring architecture was created by IBM to be reliable network architecture. Token ring is used with computers and mainframes. Token ring is an example of an architecture in which the physical topology is different from the logical topology. The token ring topology is referred to as a star-wired ring topology because its outer appearance of the network design is a star. Because you're not going to have everything set up as a ring. Why would you? It wouldn't make any sense. The computers connect to a central hub called a multi-station access unit, or MSAU. Inside the device, however, the wiring forms a circular data path, creating a logical ring. The logical ring is created by the token traveling out of the MSAU port to a computer. If the computer does not have any data to send, the token is sent back to the MSAU port and then out to the next port, to the next computer. This process continues for all computers and therefore resembles a physical ring. So, inside the computer you have all of the ports around in a circle, and it just sends it out to the port next on the circle. But on the outside, it looks like it's a star, because that's how you've set it up. Any questions about that, or does that make sense to people?
That makes a lot of sense, thanks. That's a much better explanation than what I got out of the chapter somehow. I remember inside and outside ring, but I didn't quite get it as well as you just explained it, so good job.
Oh,
one of the problems with a ring, token ring logical topology like that, and somebody had said that banks use these a lot, but one of the problems is that as the day goes on and the more and more of the computers get passing things and stuff, it can bog down.
Absolutely, there's only one token. And do remember that this happens within, like, less than a second every time. Way less than a second. You don't even notice this. It just sounds like such a complex process, but this is happening, you know,
just like the laser printing
while
process.
We're talking. Yeah.
It's really complicated, but it doesn't seem complicated because it's so fast.
All right, the next one we're going to talk about is FDDI. Fiber Distributed Data Interface. Is a type of token ring network. The implementation and topology of FDDI differs from IBM Token Ring LAN architecture. FDDI is often used to connect several buildings in an office complex or on a university campus. FDDI runs on fiber optic cable. It combines high-speed performance with the advantages of token-passing ring topology. It runs at 100 Mbps on a dual ring topology. The outer ring is called the primary ring, and the inner ring is called the secondary ring. Normally, traffic flows only on the primary ring. If the primary ring fails, the data automatically flows onto the secondary ring in the opposite direction. An FDDI dual ring supports a maximum of 500 computers per ring. The total distance of each length of cable in the ring is 100 kilometers or 62 miles. A repeater, which is a device that regenerates signal, is required every 2 kilometers or 1.2 miles. In recent years, many token ring networks have been replaced by faster Ethernet networks. All right. Any other questions on these topologies? Do we all kind of understand physical and logical topologies? I'm asking because this was a huge sticking point last year, and it
Sadly,
really confused a lot of people.
I get it better now than I did when I was a student.
Well, I probably just did a really bad job last year, but
no. But even
do we all understand this?
Have made this harder.
Oh, good. Okay. We're going to talk about industry standards next. These are used by manufacturers to make sure devices will be compatible with each other. Imagine if D-Link networks work different than Linksys networks, and then you have your Netgear networks. All of them work differently. Use different have to have different cables, have to have different network cards, different routers, different wireless devices. Nobody'd want to even be on the internet. It would just be too complicated, and you'd just go take a nap and watch TV, which is much, much easier, because you just don't have to deal with all that craziness. The standards groups create, examine, and update standards. These standards are applied to the development of technology to meet demands for higher bandwidth, efficient communications, and reliable service. Have a look at the diagram to learn more about the standards groups. This is something you can do on your own, and you should do on your own, because you have a question on standards groups
last
in
term,
the quiz. Last year, Luke did a really good presentation on standards organizations.
Yeah, I forget. It was in one of the Module 8 recordings.
Module 8,
so you could grab that.
It's at the beginning,
well, I think we
and he went on...
Yeah, of 8 part
You can
one,
also...
Yeah?
8 part 2, or was it 8 part 1?
There's one of them. I think it was part two. Grab both of them, and you'll see.
Or three. It might have even been three, because we just completely stalled last year at this point.
Did.
And we ended a lecture about term. Here. So I think it was, last term. It's really good. He also has a glossary. If you are confused by any of the terms in this classroom, in this module, grab Luke's awesome, excellent glossary that he made for you guys. It's so good.
And I think it's where the labs are.
It's somewhere.
Called, if you see glossary.rtf, grab it.
Isn't it in the module area? It's very good,
very
guys.
Very extensive.
Yeah.
I think it's in the module area.
And if anyone ever wants to volunteer to finish up 11 through 16 for him, we'd love a volunteer to finish his lovely glossary. And so if that is a project anybody feels moved to do, just let me know.
I may, once we actually get to 11 through 16.
Fair enough. Oh, you'd be really good at it. IEEE or IEEE develops standards for Ethernet. The standard governs the cabled Ethernet, and the standard is, again, can anyone tell me the standard for Ethernet? What number standard is that?
802.3.
Really? Yay, Melissa! Virtual lollipops for you.
Yay, I actually did something right tonight.
She didn't do anything wrong. It's all good. This is one standard you will be tested on. You need to know this standard number. It's really important. 802.3 Ethernet standard. All right. This standard says that cabled Ethernet networks must use the CSMA/CD access control method. I think I said that before. I think it might be in your test, because I said it a couple times. All end stations listen to the network wire for clearance to send data, much like we listen for cars when we cross the street. When the station hears that no hosts are sending data, it is then able to send its data. If another end station observes the same clear signal and transmits at the same time, a collision occurs and on the network media. The first station that detects the collision or doubling of voltage sends out a jam signal that tells all stations to stop transmitting and to run the back-off algorithm. So, it's like if we met up with an oncoming car. The people who were driving on the street would stop to gawk and back off while everything got sorted out. Horrible imagery,
but there you go. Or if you have a guide dog and the dog is backing you up because of a traffic check.
Yeah. That's probably much more a pleasant image. A back-off algorithm calculates random times in which the end station will start to try network transmission again. This random time is typically 1 or 2 milliseconds, or thousandths of a second. This sequence occurs every time there is a collision on a network, and can reduce Ethernet transmissions by up to 40%. The standard also specifies physical technologies that can be used on Ethernet networks. Any question on carrier sense multiple access with collision detection? Another good example is when we're all talking, and somebody talks over somebody else, and you will stop talking and wait to start transmitting again, or the jamming signal when somebody doesn't realize they're talking over somebody else because they haven't gotten the signal yet, is when someone will say, hey, you're talking over this person. So, yeah, there you go. Let's see. Okay, we got time. We're going to talk about the technologies that can be used on an Ethernet network. 10BASE-T is an Ethernet technology that uses a star topology. 10BASE-T is a popular Ethernet architecture, not really, whose features are indicated in its name. The 10 represents a speed of 10 megabits per second. base represents that it's baseband transmission. In baseband transmission, the entire bandwidth of a cable is used for one type of signal. The T represents twisted pair copper cabling. 10 base T have many advantages. Installation of cable is inexpensive compared to fiber optic installation. Cables are thin, flexible, and easier to install than coaxial cabling. Equipment and cables are easy to upgrade. There are also disadvantages to using 10 base T. The maximum length for 10 base T is only 100 meters or 328 feet. Cables are susceptible to EMI, electrical magnetic interference. We have fast
and
Ethernet.
It's slow.
Yeah, it is slow.
They don't list that, but it's slow.
It's really slow. The high bandwidth demands of many modern applications, such as live video conferencing and streaming audio, have created a need for high data transfer speeds. Many networks require more bandwidth than 10 Mbps Ethernet. 100 base TX... Oh, I see what happened. 100 base T is much faster than 10 base T and has a theoretical bandwidth of 100 Mbps. 100 base TX, there are lots of advantages to using this.
Is there an X?
At 100 Mbps. Yes, there is. Apparently. At 100 base...
Oh.
I don't know why. At 100 megabits, transfer rates are much higher. They're 10 times that of 10 base T, which I'm sure you guys figured out, because we can do that kind of math, can't we? It uses twisted pair cabling, which is inexpensive and easy to install. The disadvantages that we haven't mentioned already are that cables are susceptible to EMI, but not as susceptible as your 10 base T, because they're thicker and more twists and all that good stuff. 1000 base T is commonly known as gigabit Ethernet. This is a LAN architecture. And the advantages and disadvantages are basically the same. More speed, same cable length and all of that. I don't really know why they had listed all that way, but they did. Gigabit NICs and switches are expensive. Well, not really anymore. An additional equipment is required. Well, not really anymore. Most things are starting to come with the gigabit. There are some lower-end devices that don't. Just make sure to check when you're buying stuff if you want gigabit Ethernet that your equipment is going to allow you to do so.
It's backward compatible if you isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, so
it
I
is.
Can plug something that's 100 megabit and 100 and it'll still work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You could even plug in a 10 device.
Okay, fair enough.
10 base FL, or sorry, 10 base FL, 100 base FX, and 1000 base XS and LX are fiber optic Ethernet technologies. You're not going to see many of those unless you were in a big company with lots of money. Any questions on the Ethernet standards? Are we awake?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, we're awake.
Good, good.
So, we commonly have in our house, would it be like 10 base?
No.
Is what they're
probably
commonly using now?
You
or
would 100. You'd have 100.
Probably 100. Yeah.
Most common.
Because our internet's slow over here, but.
That's probably more of your ISP. This is Ethernet. Something you need to know about Ethernet is it's basically what's in your house. We're not talking about the outside cabling. We're talking about in-building cabling from your side of the router.
Yeah, from the modem to the router to the...
No,
yeah.
Not the... Well,
no, from the
modem.
From the modem to the router.
From the modem to the router.
Yeah, because the modem has an Ethernet cable, and then we have a 50-foot Ethernet cable going from one computer to a router, and then another Ethernet cable going to another computer.
That may be why your internet is slow. You might have kinks in that cable. If anyone's ever stepped on it or bad things have happened, that may be one of your issues.
Well, they stapled it to the wall to prevent my husband from tripping over it, so...
Yeah, we have the same setup in my house. That's probably fine.
Well, one other thing. The way I remember it is the Ethernet is what happens when you're... It's more what gets used, obviously, when you're copying files from one computer to another or when you're streaming something from your upstairs computer to your laptop or whatever. That's a big part. That's where you're... Okay, that's good to
know. Thank you.
I'm really confused.
Glossary is in the curriculum section.
Why?
Oh, that's okay. It's all good. It was just trying to explain about Ethernet, and I'm just like, it's used for streaming, and I'm like, yeah, but what if it's wireless?
Fair enough.
It's that's under a different standard, though. That's not 802.3.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I kind of broke
that. We're just trying to explain to Melissa that her internet is not slow because of the Ethernet probably in her house. It's probably... not the Ethernet that is me.
Yeah, it'd probably be...
Sorry for the dumb question.
No, that brought up a really good point.
Are you on cable?
Right now, as I speak, no, but my other two computers are.
Yes, and you are on cable. All of your stuff is on cable, Melissa.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm saying cable.
What do you mean by cable?
Like, this is a cable internet, as in, you know...
DSL. It's DSL internet, yeah, so it's cable.
No, it's DSL.
Okay, it's DSL.
We'll talk about that in a little while. That's okay.
Yeah, they'll get there.
This
but DSL is not cable.
Okay. Well,
it's okay.
I know that there's definitely a difference between broadband and dial-up, but, you know, I don't know all
the different
terms. Yes,
we'll get to all of that. You get that.
Yeah.
Coming.
Yeah.
That's okay. Wireless networks are governed by the 802.11 or Wi-Fi standard. This is another standard number you must know, 802.11. To review, your Ethernet is going to be 802.3. Your wireless is going to be 802.11. 802.11 is actually a group of four standards. These are A, B, G, and N. And you can remember the standards with the acronym BANG, although not in that order. So it comes before
and that's,
B.
That's not something that Cisco says. That's something that we've come up with.
That's a Sean thing. That's not
mine. That's a Chris Lake thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Chris Lake. He used to go, yeah, it's a bang card. And that's what he used to
say. I guess he did.
I did come up with the fun key, but no, I didn't come up with bang for the...
Oh, you did. devices conforming to the 802.11a standard allow WLANs to achieve data rates as high as 54 megabits per second. IEEE 800A devices operate in the 5 GHz radio frequency range and within a maximum range of 45.7 meters or 150 feet. You're not going far on an A card. 802.11b operates in the 2.4 GHz frequency ranges with a maximum theoretical data rate of 11 Mbps. These devices operate within a maximum range of 91 meters or 300 feet. With B, you aren't going very fast. IEEE 802.11g provides the same theoretical maximum speed as A, which is 54 megabits, but operates in the same 2.4 GHz spectrum as 802.11b. Unlike 802.11a, 802.11g is backwards compatible with 802.11b. G, it's good because you get the best of both worlds. The same speeds and strength. They combined A's speed with B's strength, Strength. So it's good. Gee, good, because it's the best of both worlds. It has a maximum range of 91 meters or 300 feet. So, 802.11b is fast but low range and not backward compatible. 802.11b is slower than A, but can travel farther. And 802.11g is the best of both worlds and is backwards compatible with B because it runs on the same frequencies. Now we've got 802.11n, which is a newer wireless standard that has a theoretical bandwidth of 540 megabits and operates in either 2.4 GHz or 5 GHz frequencies. It has a maximum range of 250 meters or 98 feet, so not as far, but that's okay. Remember how I told you guys about protocols being layered? We're not going to do the OSI reference model today because I don't want to get into that today, because I'll just save that for next week's lesson, because that's more brain exploding fun, and I think you guys had enough of that today. Any questions?
I've still yet to see N in action.
Oh, awesome. I have. We have N here.
It's nothing really spectacular to see because it just behaves.
Yeah. Basically. Everybody all good? So, I want 8.9.1, and if you can get around to it, 8.9.2. But if you're not ready for 8.9.2, that's okay. But let's try for 8.9.1.
Cool deal.
And if you have not done Module 6 Labs, you probably should.
There are people who haven't done Module 6 Labs.
Oh, yeah. Melissa, you're 6.7.2, you're probably wondering what you want to use for that. You want to use your laptop.
Now that you've got one, you can use it.
Yeah.
As in research your own laptop.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure, because you probably weren't worried about it when I mentioned that a couple weeks ago, and I know you're just about up to that lab, so there's that information for you.
And for anyone else who hadn't gotten to that point yet. That lab actually helped me to... It didn't actually work on my mine, but on my dad's. It actually allowed me to find an update to the hard drive firmware that decreased some noise that it made from Compaq's website. So this lab can be very useful.
Definitely, especially when I'm very new to the world of laptops. So I'm learning as I go, too, so...
Absolutely.
You didn't have a coffee, Grace.
About ready to talk?
No, I didn't. I probably will. Yeah, I think we're done. We are done. Any other questions that anyone wants to ask before we stop recording? Cool.
We're stopping?
Yeah, we're done. Yeah. I'm not going on to the
next
section.
There are 20 minutes left.
Yep,
yeah,
I'm not going
believe
on.
Me.
I thought that was something that was coming up later on.
No, this is something I'm not going to do
now.
It's going to take me more than 20 minutes to do that section, and
explain
people's
that.
Brains get tired an hour and a half, so...
And that's OSI,
really
rough. Yeah, if we're not behind or anything, so if I stop now, and give everybody a go at this one, they're fresh.
To a lot of people, Lally, this stuff is very alien. Like,
I could explain.
Right. I've at least heard of the terms.
I could probably explain the OSI reference model to you in like 10 minutes, but other people might want more explanation.
Yeah, like me, I'm a dunce.
No, you're not.
It's a hard concept.
Even I still just barely understand it, and I've heard it a bunch of times. So.
Oh, we finally got it through your head with the ice cream sundae.
Yeah, the brownie sundae kind of helped, except not quite.
Oh well, you'll get it again.
Does it just make you want an ice cream sundae more?
No, he just had one. He'd stuffed himself full of one.
And then she decided that, because I decided to try and explain it that way, and it didn't quite work. But it was just funny because I was like, you know what? This has totally hurt my brain. I'm gonna have this sundae that they got me.
I used to have something pretty filthy to remember that when, you know, it's been a while
since. Oh, there's lots of those.
Your assignment is to think that up, because we can't tell lots of people, but some of us would really like to know what it is.
It was pretty foul, and no, I wouldn't do it during a recording, but some of my best work is just not releasable.
Believe me, we googled some up last week, and they were
bad. It was like OSI layer 7. I forget what the website was.
They were absolutely awful.
And I think we.
I saved it as a favorite. That was an interesting one.
Oh good.
Oh good.
They were just. Sean kept sending them to me during my discovery lecture, and I just had to keep telling him to carry because they were just absolutely unbelievable.